This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Hockey News Podcast. It's me, writer-editor Matt Larkin. I'm here with my usual cronies, senior writer Ken Campbell, associate senior writer Ryan Kennedy, ready to talk some hockey, as we always do. Let's get started with Mr. Connor McDavid, and for a change, we're not talking about his scoring lead. We're talking about his chin, which bashed off the ice Sunday night in a game. He was removed, spotted by a spotter, because that's what they do. They spot.
Right.
He was removed from the game.
Not to be confused with Steve Spott, the assistant coach.
Exactly. Yeah. And McDavid was very hot under the collar about being removed from the game. Didn't think he needed to come out. What do you guys think? Was that the right move? Does McDavid have a right to be upset? Or does he really not have a place saying anything here?
Well, I think he has a right to be upset, but it doesn't make any difference. He said that the spotter kind of made up his mind that something was wrong, and he said that he made it into something it wasn't. And I don't agree at all. I don't think the spotter had any idea if anything was wrong with Connor McDavid, and that's the whole reason why he was pulled off the ice. You can't, on the one hand, say that you're an advocate for player safety and all this other stuff, and then get upset when it's inconvenient. And I mean, it's coming, guys. It's coming. It's going to happen. We're going to be in Game 7 of a playoff series.
Geez.
Someone's going to get their bell rung and get sent off. A star is going to get his bell rung and get sent off, and then there's going to be a hue and cry. It's going to happen. As sure as we're sitting here right now, that's going to happen. And it should. I mean, you know what? The player is the last person you can trust. The coach is the second last person you can trust, and all the rest of the guys on the bench are the third last person you can trust in the world to be forthcoming about this stuff. The rule is there for a reason. The NHL is facing a massive lawsuit by former players who claim that the league didn't do enough to prevent them from getting long-term head injuries. So that's the way it's got to be, and I think that the NHL absolutely made the right call.
Yeah, players will lie. I've always maintained that, like, sports psychology is just lying to yourself and others, you know? Like, a lot of it will be, you know, amping yourself up for a game and being like, oh, we can't look past these guys. They're a good team, good players. Meanwhile, you're playing, like, the last place team in the league. It's like, well, then if they're a good team, who's a bad team?
Or I'm in the greatest shape of my life every September.
Yeah, exactly. So it's
the all-time whopper. I'm not even thinking about my contract
for
next season. I'm not even thinking about it.
This rivalry
game. That's the biggest load of crap ever.
Yeah. This rivalry game, it's just another game.
Yeah.
No matter that I probably put $1,000 on the board for whoever gets the winning goal against the team that waived me a couple of years ago. But it's interesting because I've been thinking about this a lot lately with all the declining NFL ratings and whatnot. And some of that is concussion driven. It seems to me that if you're a coach, the line you have to take with a player is you need to tell us the truth, because if you're less than 100% effective out there, you're hurting the team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the logic they have to go by.
Mm-hmm.
We know you're competitors. We know you want to be out there, but you're not a doctor. It is good to listen to your own body. Fair enough. But there are things you don't know about. If you, like, turn the puck over because you might be a little dazed, that's on the, that hurts the team, not just you. So you should be happy to come out, or you should tell us when you're not feeling 100%, because it could have an effect on the entire game that you're not even thinking about, because your job is to score goals, and you know that. But I feel like maybe that's the tack they need to take.
Yeah, except for the coach who once said, the guy got his bell rung, and he said, he went to the assistant coach. He said, how is he? And he said, well, he's not too good. He thinks he's Wayne Gretzky. He says, well, tell him he is and get him out there. But the thing to me is I've seen, and we've all seen, guys get concussions from a lot less than what Connor McDavid lost, a lot less impact than Connor McDavid took on his chin. And, like, he's holding his chin. I don't care if your chin's not sore, because it doesn't matter, right? Like, because that fall you know, hitting the ice with that impact has the potential. Yeah. Not saying it does, it will, but it has the potential to cause a concussion. Simple as that. You know,
yeah. Chin bouncing off ice looks bad.
Yeah.
If I was a concussion spotter, I'd be like,
I'd be more pissed if I was Jared Spurgeon, because he stepped on Jared Spurgeon's stick and fell. Like, Jared Spurgeon didn't even trip him or anything.
Yeah. Noted bully.
Jared Intimidator Spurgeon.
Yeah.
To me, it was I consider it a big victory, because it seems like every time we're talking about spotters, we're talking about how little power they have, how they're getting overruled, and what's the point of them if they can't make anything happen. And, you know, I'm a sufferer of post-concussion syndrome, and I can tell you, I've had a lot of concussions. I can remember at least one, or sorry, I cannot remember at least one, I should put it that way, where I lost 30 minutes of memory, some memory before the impact and 30 minutes after, and it was like I teleported to a different place, didn't remember anything about the hit. Wow. So if you see McDavid irate about getting pulled off the ice, it's possible if he was concussed that he doesn't even know yet that he's been concussed.
Well, look at Dennis Weidman.
Dennis Weidman, perfect example.
And Dennis, what did Dennis Weidman do? He sat on the bench, the concussion spotter said, you have to go to the quiet room and basically said, F you, I'm not going. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, I'm with you on that. What happened on that concussion? What were you doing?
That one I was really young. I was sliding on some ice. I was sliding on some ice, I blinked, and then I was at home halfway done taking off my snow pants. Like, wow. It was like I teleported home, and I said, what? Like, I had no idea. The memories are gone. So, yeah. Wow. It's serious business, everyone.
Did you do a lot of drugs when you were a kid?
No, I didn't need to. The concussions were enough, I guess. It made me weird enough. Johnny Gaudreau, he's a guy who had finger surgery. It looked like, it's funny, the Flames forecast has changed so much in the last few weeks. It looked like they were doomed. Gaudreau looked like he was going to be out long term. Yeah. He comes back early with a crazy power glove, and the Flames are suddenly hot, pun intended. Are they back in the mix here in the Pacific Division? Should we start believing in them? And what do you think?
I think so, because first of all, because the Pacific Division is not what the Pacific Division used to be. You know, I mean, you've got Anaheim, Edmonton, and LA who are kind of mucking around to see who's going to finish in the top three, but they're not. Nobody's picking this thing up and running away with it. And that's the thing with the NHL. I mean, you know, I mean, it just seems to me like this is Gary Bettman's dream, you know? Like, it's just everybody is so closely matched, and, you know, you win three games in a row and then you lose to two last-place teams. It's crazy, but you know, I mean, the Flames were actually playing pretty well before Johnny Gaudreau came back. I think they were 6-3-1 in their in the 10 games he was gone.
You read my blog?
No, I never read your blog. No, don't. I just don't. Sorry. I wish I could, but
Good plug.
Anyway. They were 6-3-1 without him, but obviously with him, they're great. And I love the fact that they put him on the second line with Bennett and Chiasson, and Bennett moves to center which is a good spot for him. Mm-hmm. And I think that can really work for them. And Gaudreau, you know, I mean, he just came back last night and was insanely ridiculous. Like, he just doesn't give up the puck ever. Mm-hmm. And he's just so slick and so skilled. And it looked like he hadn't missed a beat. So I think the thing with the Flames, though, is probably the most important player they have right now is Chad Johnson.
Chad Johnson, yeah, there you go.
Can a career backup carry the mail for them this year? I think that's the question we have to ask.
Who's your starter? Flash forward, Flames make the playoffs, and who do you think is going to be the starter in how many months from now? 5 months from now? Maybe it's going to be Chad Johnson. Brian Elliott may have lost the gig already.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he may very well have.
It's the story of Brian Elliott's life. Yeah. Everywhere he goes, it's like, this time I'll be the starter. But
yeah, or maybe they go out and get somebody, you know?
Man, how weird would that be? But that would be my big thing right now in Calgary is, Chad Johnson's your starter. Dougie Hamilton's your best defenseman right now. There was, you know, rumors about him. The narratives have shifted to good time, Johnny Hockey's back, and the team is winning. I think the key for Calgary now is to be able to maintain those good vibes and push the other narratives aside, where you don't have to think about mixing up this chemistry and making deals and things like that. This is a team that I think they're a playoff team, but they're not a contender, so I wouldn't want to do anything drastic if I were them, but I mean, certainly a lot of good signs, and Matthew Tkachuk, you know, he's been a great addition, and I like their depth now. They've got guys on three lines that can actually put the puck in the net, and I think that's a very good omen for them.
Yeah, they wanted, they didn't, like, it almost seemed like before the year started that they actually did not want Matthew Tkachuk to make this team. You know, like, it just seemed like they everybody thought he was going back to junior. That seemed to be the narrative that every, and they did, but he just wouldn't let them think that way.
He forced his way on.
And and he's been really good.
Yeah, and he gives them a nice element because he's really not fun to play against.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of revels in it, and I love that about him.
Yeah.
Because you can put the puck in the net, but he can also, like, really bash guys into the board. He can really anger opponents, and I think that's a nice element that Calgary might not have had enough of.
And if, you know, if the Brodies and the Giordanos and that start really picking it up, then, you know, these guys will definitely be dangerous from the back end, too.
It's interesting, too, to me, because if you looked at the analytics, we might have seen this coming as well, because Glenn Gullitson brought in, and Bob Hartley, the Flames, obviously, under his tenure, were notoriously awful when it came to the possession numbers. And even though they weren't winning early this season, their possession numbers were among the most improved in the league. And the one thing that destroys good possession is bad goaltending.
Yeah.
Flames had the worst save percentage in the NHL last year, and about a month ago, they were like 29th. So suddenly you get good goaltending, and then boom. Yeah, that's right.
Sure.
Yeah, Brian Elliott trade paid dividends. It's tough though. You do
that.
You feel for a guy like Brian Elliott, who seemed like he was, you know, a Rodney Dangerfield, gets no respect guy, so good for so many years in St. Louis, set the modern day record for 1 year for save percentage before it was broken by Craig Anderson. But you know, it's finally his chance to prove, hey, I can be a starter in this league, and boom, he gets
it
taken away from him so fast,
and
it's a walk year too. So now all of a sudden, is Brian Elliott going to get paid starters money in free agency?
No,
I don't know. It doesn't look like it
right
now.
Not if this keeps up.
Yeah,
but
Ken's face was like
thing.
Not even close.
No, but the thing is, you talked about I wouldn't do anything, you know, any big thing. But I mean, if you're going to address your goaltending long term, like, that's the thing. They still have a massive chasm in the long-term goaltending here. And
Ben,
so if
Bishop!
Ben Bishop!
Yeah, it almost happened, right?
Yeah, so if you can address that, then
yeah,
you know, maybe you do make a move.
Yeah. Ben Bishop for Brian Elliott.
That's right. Well, they were once in the same system. No, they were twice in the same system.
Twice,
both Senators.
St. Louis.
Yeah. Well, Bishop told me that, like, he lost a job in St. Louis to Brian Elliott, and that's when he went to Ottawa.
That's right. So it seems like the Flames' fortunes are improving. One team that seems as hopeless as any in the NHL right now is the Colorado Avalanche. And they're a team that, you know, they've amassed so many first-round picks over the years, Landeskog, Duchesne, McKinnon, et cetera. But it just seems like this franchise is going absolutely nowhere. They change head coaches, and no change in the team's success. Where do you start? What do you do with this team? I have no idea where you'd start with the Avalanche. What do you guys think?
Okay, well, Landeskog's hurt right now, right? So, first of all, let's put aside the notion that Gabriel Landeskog is ever going to be a big-time offensive player, because he's not. He'll be a 50-point guy who plays both ends of the ice really well.
Yeah.
Which nowadays is worth about $6 million a year, so good for him. But right now, their third line is Samuel Haley, Carl Soderberg, and Andreas somebody. I can't even remember.
Martinson?
Yeah, Martinson. And their fourth line is not Rene Bork, but Gabriel Bork, John Mitchell, and Jerome Iginla?
Wow.
Like, that's a bad... And they're set there... And granted, again, Eric Johnson and Fedor Tuten are hurt. Here's their bottom four defense. Patrick Wierkoch, Eric Jelena, Nikita Zadorov, Cody Golubev. That kind of tells you everything you need to know right there.
Most of those guys have already been through a couple of teams. I kind of feel like Joe Sakic doesn't know what he's doing.
I kind of feel like that, too.
We give him a pass because he's Joe Sakic.
It's Joe Sakic.
But if he wasn't Joe Sakic, then...
Yeah.
Look at those guys they signed this summer. Like, Joe Colburn, okay, he gets his points, but really, do you win? Like, do teams sit there and go, oh, shit, we're playing against Joe Colburn tonight, we're done. You know, like, they don't have anybody that really scares you that way, do they?
Like, I kind of feel like their free agent tact was like, we're not going to be good again, so we're just going to get a bunch of guys that played for the University of Denver. Joe Colborne, Patrick Viercott, it'll still be fun, you know? Yeah. It'll be like homecoming.
I was watching them the other night, and they were raving about Rennie Bork, and it was like, wow, that's really what's wrong with this team. If this guy's one of your best players, like, seriously? Because next week he might not even be able to play in the league for about 2 months. Because that's the way he rolls. Animal print pants out of control. But anyways, I just have a, like, to me, like, the Colorado Avalanche just seems depressing.
It's really broken.
It's depressing. They had a 5-game homestand. They just had a 5-game homestand. They lost all 5 at home. Lost all one of them in overtime or shootout, but they lost all 5.
And they haven't even hit bottom. That's the scary part. Like they haven't realized what they are yet. And it's interesting because, you know, a lot of their core guys have come up in trade rumors over the years. Matt Duchene, especially Gabriel Landeskog. To me, I think it's time for Sakic to start exploring trading those guys. But
what are you gonna do? Like, why?
Well, because you got to blow it up. But your best players, what have they done? Nothing. Look at their possession numbers. Duchene's numbers are bad this year. When you see him playing on Team Canada, you think, this kid has so much skill at both ends of the ice. He's so fast. But the results aren't there. And to me, the guy who I want to point the crosshairs at, who always seems to get a pass, is Nathan MacKinnon. He scored 24 goals, 63 points as a rookie, and he hasn't approached those numbers since. And we see the eye test. We see the skills, the speed. He should be so much better. And I mean, you could argue, and I want to hear what you guys think, you could argue that it's not his fault, it's not any of the players' fault, they need better coaching, they need better support around them, but the results are not there, and it's been several years now.
Yeah.
Here's my question, and I know that you think MacKinnon should finish more, but you know, you talk about Matt Duchene, who played very well at the World Cup of Hockey.
He was terrific.
Nathan MacKinnon was... Yep. One of, you know, Team North America's best players.
Exactly.
Do you think maybe it's because their defense is so bad that they never get the puck in the places they need to get it?
Yeah. Well, they never get the puck, period.
Yeah.
They don't get any bad places.
Yeah. Colorado was one of the worst teams in the league in terms of possession under Patrick Waugh. Now they're transitioning over to Jared Bednar. But I wonder if they're kind of wasting these top kids because... their team is so disjointed. And I think with Eric Johnson getting hurt, that just compounds the problem. They've always seemed to have a hatred for Tyson Barry for some reason.
Yeah, they hate him. How dare you
score 50 points every year?
Yeah, they come
to arbitration.
Yeah, and they did the same thing
with
Ryan.
Nobody takes anybody to arbitration anymore.
Yeah, and they did the same thing with Ryan O'Reilly, and congratulations.
Yeah, way to go. That was good.
That worked out very well.
Turned out great.
Awesome. But yeah, they need at least, like, 2, if not 3 more legit NHL defensemen. And that's very difficult to do in short order.
Well, you got to stop pissing off your best players.
That would also help.
You got to stop doing that. Yeah. Like, don't treat Ryan O'Reilly like he's yesterday's
caliber. Like he's Ryan O'Mara.
Don't treat Tyson Barry like that because players hear that and they don't want to go there and play.
Yeah.
Like, I got to think Jerome McGinley's saying, I'm so out of here. Like, I got to think he's thinking at the deadline, like...
one last ride.
I got to give it a shot here because...
man. Yeah. Go back to Calgary. Imagine Calgary makes it.
Right wing fourth line on the worst team in the league.
Yeah. He'll go to Sakic and say, Ray Bork me.
Yeah, exactly.
You were there.
Yeah, yeah.
You were there.
Yeah, yeah.
Ray
the
Bork
opposite.
Me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, let's say I give you MacKinnon. I give you guys MacKinnon, okay? He's still young enough. Obviously, you can still build around him. The problem that I wonder about is, even if you're right, Ryan, even if it's not the forward's fault, if you keep your Landeskogs, your Matt Duchenes, will this team ever lose enough to really tank to get that first overall lottery pick, or do you need to sell off some pieces?
I think we're seeing it this year.
So far, but
are they
going to be worse than the Coyotes 5 months from now? I don't know.
I feel like the Coyotes at least are going to be like scrappy at the end, and... like, you know, with so many young players, they'll at least kind of care a bit. Whereas I can see this Avs team just be like, you know what? The mountains are lovely here. We're checking out in February.
Yeah, exactly. And we, you know, I mean, I've watched them play a few times this year. And they just seem resigned to losing. And as soon as something happens, it's like, okay, well, whatever.
It's like what happened in Edmonton
the
last few years.
We're done tonight. So, you know, let's give it a go next time. You know, there's only 8,000 people here, so really, it's not that big a deal. Like, I just find it so depressing, like, especially when you think of the Colorado Avalanche used to be. You know?
And Denver, I think of Denver as a hockey town.
Of course
totally
it is.
Yes.
Their logo has a mountain on it, sort of. Come on.
Plenty of hockey there,
yeah.
So, in your opinion then, both of you guys, would you not blow up this team? Would you find a way to turn things around by, you know, maybe you fire Joe Sakic, maybe you sell off different pieces, but do you still believe in keeping the young core, including Landeskog and Duchesne? If you're Avs management, do you keep them?
I think you do. I think you build around those three up front, and you say sorry to Tyson Barrie, and
we were wrong.
You let the chips fall where they may this summer. I think they're kind of in a situation that Toronto was in, you know, the past couple of years, where it's just like, clear out as much rot as you can, and start stockpiling some good prospects.
Like Francois Beauchemin, see you later, thanks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Paul McGinley, see you later, thanks.
Yeah.
Carl Soderberg, see you later, thanks.
I say Semyon Varlamov, too. Maybe unprotect him for the expansion draft.
Yeah, go with Bicker.
To me, the guys that you talked about, Matt, they're still young enough that if you can rebuild this thing properly, they will be a big part of the answer, right? And so I think you've got to put them around in a decent situation for once. Like, has any of these guys been in a really good, other than the year that Colorado made the playoffs? They haven't really been in a situation where you could really see what they can contribute on a good team, right?
Yeah. So, luckily you have, like, international where, like, McKinnon has won gold at the World Championship, same as Duchesne.
Yeah.
Duchesne's won, you know, Olympic gold, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a bit of an idea. But, yeah, I think you just got to clear it out, and you do that thing where...
And unfortunately, you fire the general manager. He's an icon, but, you know...
So was Wayne Gretzky, right?
Yeah, in Arizona. There are some guys who are just out of their element. And I just always got the impression that Joe Sakic was kind of there as a figurehead. Like, you know, I mean, he... You know, there are guys who want to do the work, and they want to really dig in, and, like, star guys who really want to dig in, and...
The guys
and work and go to, you know, go to Lethbridge in the middle of January and stuff like that. And I just don't get the sense that Joe is really too willing to get his hands too dirty.
Hmm. If you look at the scoring standings right now, you've got two generational talents. That term gets thrown around a lot these days. But tied at the top, you've got Sidney Crosby, Patrick Laine, 16 goals apiece. Who do you think is going to win the Rocket Richard? And you don't have to name one of those guys if you think it's going to be somebody else.
I think it's going to be Crosby. He's 50th in shots this year, and he's leading the league in scoring. He's only taken 67 shots. Shooting percentage is almost 24% right now. And I think Sidney Crosby just has to wake up one morning and decide, well, I haven't won this one yet. He hasn't won it yet, has he?
He's co-won it.
I haven't won it outright yet.
Yeah.
I think I'll win the Rocket Richard Trophy this year. Just like he woke up one day and decided he was going to be the second coming of Steve Yzerman. You know, like, he just, when he decides he's going to do something, he just goes up and does it and wins. And I think if he gets it in his head, like, he's playing with Connor Sheary and Patrick Hornquist. It's not like he has to, you know, dish the puck off to somebody who's going to bury it, right? He can do the burying. He can be more selfish. And I think once he realizes that, you know, he can best help the Pittsburgh Penguins by scoring more goals and maybe getting fewer assists, like, who would have thought, eh? Like, he'll get more goals and Phil Kessel will... He'll get more goals than Phil Kessel, and Phil Kessel will get more assists.
Yeah, they do.
So, but I think if he realizes that that's the best thing he can do to help the Pittsburgh Penguins, then he's going to do it, and he's going to be the best at it.
Interesting.
Yeah, I can certainly see Crosby doing it. I can see Laine as well. Simply because I think with Pittsburgh, the stakes might be a bit higher, where if you need... If people are going to focus on Crosby late in the season and they're trying to, say, win the division, then he can start dishing, and we know he can do that properly. Whereas with Laine, he's a pure scorer, and it doesn't seem to matter if you cover him because he's either going to get position with his body or he's just going to find that, you know, half second to get off that huge shot of his. So I think, you know...
And he's also found the Ovechkin comfort zone on the
exactly.
Right? Like, he just... Yeah, so... I'd be a little worried about him down the stretch a little bit. You know, he hasn't played a season like an NHL season before. Of course, Teemu Selanne didn't, and he scored 76 goals one year. So, I would probably put my money on Crosby, but I mean, Laine is a he's a wonderful talent when he gets the puck on his stick. Mm-hmm. It's so fun to watch him score goals, and yeah. I love his reactions too. I'd love yeah. to, you know, the way he just holsters the stick and everything.
It's good for the game. Yeah,
yeah, I like totally. That.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm going to go with a third pick. To me, the argument about Crosby's shooting percentage and low shot totals—that's an argument against Crosby winning because it means he's going to regress. He's not shooting the puck enough, and his shooting percentage is abnormally high. That number is going to come down. I do think, obviously, talent-wise, Sid has the ability to do it, so it wouldn't shock me if he did. And Line 8, I think he's going to be winning many Rocket Richards for years to come. I think he's a bit slump-prone. He seems to have peaks and valleys. Yep. I'm going to say a sentence that has never been uttered before in the history of the world. My sleeper pick to lead the league in goals is Alex Ovechkin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's not that far behind.
Is he at 13 right now?
Something like that, yeah. And I don't have it in front of me, but he's close. And the Capitals' power play is still deadly when it gets really hot. I don't think he's done. I think he's got one more year holding that goal-scoring mantle, so he's my pick.
Hmm. Interesting. Washington is weird, eh? This mm-hmm. year?
It kind of feels
they're
like...
really weird. They're
yeah,
really,
yeah.
a really weird
I watched
team.
That Islanders game the other night, and, I mean, their power play, it looked good, but they couldn't beat Halak at all, and then they just... kept doing dumb stuff.
Yeah, they
specifically
stunk here too,
specifically
dude.
Dmitry Orlov was doing dumb stuff. but it cost them, and I wonder if they're at that place right now where they realize it's like, okay, it literally doesn't matter what we do in the regular season. We just need to win in the playoffs. We need
yeah.
to figure that puzzle out, and yeah. maybe they're figuring that out as they go.
Yeah, they're
know.
In eighth place right now, though. That's the only problem. They're in eighth place in the East.
Yeah, wouldn't get in though.
They're kingsing.
Yeah, LA Kings.
They're kingsing. Yeah. That's a verb.
They're kingsing.
Yeah, they're the only team in the East that's like that. That's a real kind of heavy kind of team, right?
Yeah, it's interesting to me, and they've reached that pantheon now, like the Sharks pantheon of team we predicted to reach the Stanley Cup final so many times that I can't do it anymore. I'm
right.
done.
I'm not. No,
they could win. They could win
again.
78
yeah.
games. I'd be like, nah, they're
no,
gonna.
You gotta show me.
I just can't.
You gotta show me.
Can't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a chance.
We will be happy to be wrong.
That's right.
But we can't say it again.
You know what it's time for, fellas? You know
they'd
what it's
be playing
for?
The New York
Wait.
Rangers in the first round, speaking of the...
There we go, there's the segue.
They would play the Rangers in the first round.
That would be bad.
Would anybody put money on Washington beating the Rangers in the first round right now?
No,
I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I would not.
I think they'd be playing the Rangers. If I'm wrong, I stand corrected.
Yeah.
But speaking of which...
Yeah! Da-da-da!
Was he... see, we have no official... I was going to pretend that we had some official sound.
Yeah.
Was he a Ranger? How's that?
You could do the Lone Ranger song.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. All right, I'm going to kick it off.
Okay.
Tim Kerr.
Was a Ranger.
Oh, that was too quick. I
yeah,
guess I
was.
Picked a crappy one.
Was.
Yeah.
Damn
yeah,
it.
Come on.
I'm blaming this on web editor Ian Denemy. He suggested that to me right before I came in here. Throwing him under the bus, that was his idea, not mine.
Well, that's bad. Like, that's just... Like, what do you take us for? Seriously. Are you just,
I agree. It was a bad suggestion.
Our time
it was a bad suggestion by
Are
Ian.
Are you just wasting our time here? Like, come on.
Pretty
okay.
much.
I'm going to go with a person you were talking about before we got on the old podcast, the old radio podcast, or whatever you want to call
it's
it.
It's not radio. No.
Former or current TSN analyst, Ray Ferraro.
That's a good
I'm going to say no. I think it's a trick question. He was an Islander, not a Ranger. That's my official guess.
I'm going to say he was a Ranger. He feels like he would have been one of those short-term, we need some scoring, he's a veteran. I'm going to say was a Ranger.
And you're going to be right, Ryan Kelly.
Whoa.
56 games in 95-96 for the Rangers, the year after they won the Cup. And if
Two
you
years.
Go to HockeyDB, I don't want to plug any other websites, but if you go to his the HockeyDB website, it's the picture for his bio is him in a Ranger shirt with that really like horrible mustache.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All
yeah,
right.
So yeah, there you
All
go.
All right. Learning
okay.
something new every day.
So,
are you just doing this now?
No. Just okay.
Like he's on his phone.
I have the
stuff.
Answer. Look, HockeyDB is blank.
Don't show it.
For the record. No, it's blank.
Oh, okay.
It's blank.
All right.
Blank.
All right.
Okay.
I just want to, you know, when I'm finished, you know, I want to have some backup here. Alexander Daigh.
Was. Absolutely was.
I vaguely remember.
Absolutely was. I know he was.
I know he was a Minnesota
Don't
Wild.
Say no, because he was.
All right.
Don't make him swear.
Don't
he,
say no,
he
because
was.
He was a Ranger.
He was?
Alexander Daigh was a Ranger, yes.
Boom!
Boom.
For one season, and then he played for the Hartford Wolfpack for part of that season as well.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
He was a demoted Ranger.
He was. Wow.
Special category. Wade Redden category.
There you go.
All right, everyone. Well,
both former Ottawa Senators, too.
Both former Ottawa Senators.
Yeah.
And we'll leave you thinking about Alexander Daigle and Wade Redden. And we'll be back next week. Thank you for listening.